Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Nick and Gary Get Serious About Jokes. I am Nick. This is
Garrett.
Oh, okay. I stepped all on you, my bad. I get carried away with the momentum. As always, we are brought to you by Eastside Legal LLC. Eastside Legal LLC. If you have any questions, legal, whether they be about bankruptcy law, criminal law, or family law, the lawyers at Eastside Legal can help you. That's Eastside Legal LLC. And we're also brought to you once again by Cardin Illustrations. If you live in the Nashville area, or even if you don't live in the Nashville area, but you have access to the internet and you need prints done, logos done, just about anything that requires illustration, the artist at Cardin Illustration can set you in the right direction. So that's Cardin Illustration. All right. I got both of the sponsors in under 1 minute, so I'm excited about that.
That was awesome. Great job.
Thank you, sir. Are you ready? Let's just jump into it, man. Like we talked about, we left our listeners with a bit of a cliffhanger last week because we weren't sure where we were gonna, who we were gonna review or talk about.
I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but we were discussing either watching John Mulaney's new special or Kevin James's new special.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like, I couldn't remember if it was something that we said off the air or on the air. Because, as I guess, as our listeners can tell, we obviously don't listen to the podcast after it goes into production. We just just move on to the next one.
Just try not to look back.
Yeah, we're a very forward thinking team. I feel
very progressive.
We were
choosing between these two very different people, and we decided to watch the John Mulaney one. So, what do you think, Nick?
Man, I thought it was excellent. Like, I'm a big John Mulaney fan. I love the first two he had. And I love this one. And I got to admit, I have not seen his SNL special, which we can. Or when he hosted SNL, I was a little disappointed that his show didn't go anywhere, his sitcom. But like stand-up wise, I think there's an argument to be made that he has maybe not the heavyweight belt right now, but maybe like in wrestling they have the Intercontinental belt or the U.S. heavyweight belt. It's like it's not quite the world championship, but it's like one of the lesser titles. I feel like he's right there.
I definitely think he's one of the biggest right now.
Yeah, and I think what impressed me most about his special was that he employed like a bunch of different joke telling styles. Like he had his act outs. He had his obviously, like several stories, and then he had like political commentary, family stuff, relationship stuff. I mean, he hit on a lot of different topics in a lot of different ways. Like I feel like any comic has their own rhythm, and if you watch any comic long enough, that there's going to be sort of a predictability and repetitiveness to their jokes, but. He never got old to me. You know, like when I feel like I could have watched another hour and would have been fine. So, what about you? What was your initial take or your general takes on it?
Well, I completely agree. I thought it was great. The interesting thing about Mulaney is that he's just so polished. Like he just, I guess he's been just doing it so long, and he's just one of the best at this point. So, just everything seems so clean and like intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just really understands what he's wanting to do and wanting to say, which is really cool and interesting. And I thought it was really funny. I felt like I lost a little bit of interest about halfway through, but by the end of it, I was really disappointed that it ended.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I thought it was thought it was awesome and definitely on par with his previous specials that I've seen. So,
yeah, I mean, when you say he's clean and polished, I think that's a great way. It seems as if I was thinking about this after watching it, like trying to think what, you know, what one of the things I wanted to talk about today. And I remember thinking at one point that he made a face while delivering a punchline, and I just thought he's probably been making that face his whole life when he was trying to be funny or mischievous or so, you know, like it almost seems like his stand-up persona is such a natural outgrowth of who he's been his whole life.
Yeah.
Like I wonder how much. I mean, obviously he's had to work and develop it, but I feel like the jump between funny John Mulaney with his friends and funny John Mulaney on stage isn't that big of a leap. You know what I mean? Like,
I feel like it's probably a lot of subtraction too. Like you said, he's probably always making that funny facial expression, or was always just funny. But it was probably, I mean, I'm guessing it was more of like figuring out the things that he did that are funny and just not doing them.
Oh, that's a good way of saying it. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. Yeah, I could see that with him. Just, I mean, it's just such an abundance of, he probably sees humor all the time. And he's just, it's just a matter of figuring out, okay, what not to make fun of.
Yeah, because a lot of the things that he says, like when he's making comments about things, like are so simple, but just I don't know, like they're the it's really interesting how he's able to get to find the funny thing about something that's like really simple and seems mundane, like when he's talking about like the assemblies and it's about like stranger danger or whatever, and he's like, oh, we're eight or whatever. Like, that's just, like, a really simple sentence, but it's so funny because it really just, in, like, a, like, two words gets to the center of why this situation is so weird. So, yeah, I think he's really good at that.
Yeah. That whole bit, I don't know how long it lasted, but that was, how great was that? Just the...
Really good, yeah.
I mean, because I remember school assemblies. I do remember, you know, a little bit of what he's talking about, but it was almost, but it was like, I still felt there. Like he was able to take what, like maybe 20% of common ground that we had in this experience and make it feel like it was 100%. Like, cause I do remember being a kid. Like, I remember one time it was this, school assembly, and they brought a blind man to talk to us.
Oh, wow.
And I don't even remember why. Like, I couldn't even tell you the purpose behind it. But I just remember him just talking to us in this and I don't know what the lesson from it was, but it was just like but it was that idea of like adults saying, hey, kids will like this, or this will help kids. And then pointing out sort of the absurdity of that thinking that, like, all right, yeah, we'll teach, you know, we'll have a cop, you know, come talk to these kids about getting kidnapped and what to do for you, which on some level you could see how that would be important to do.
Right.
But on another level, the execution was just like,
I, go ahead. I felt like the same way in that, like, I kind of related to it, but it was also a little bit different. Like, I remember, like, when I was in school, like, at one point, like, they had, and, like, the way you mentioned, like, where you were, like, in homeroom or whatever, and they're like, leave your books, we're going to have an assembly. That was, like, to me, I was like, oh, my God, I totally remember that. Because that would happen, and, like, they would show us, like, weird stuff. Like, I can't remember anything helpful happening. Like, one time they had, like, this, it was like an African band, and, like, I guess it was supposed to, like, be culturally enriching, And I just remember them like playing songs and like and stuff and stuff like that, where it's like it's probably a good thing, but it is a little bit odd that it's like this is the thing we're doing instead of learning grammar or whatever.
Yeah, it seems like one of the things that's just interesting is that it seems like it's almost completely devoid of context. Like now, I think we have like weeks develop, like we're like, oh, it's you know, Cultural Appreciation Week or something, and you could be like, oh, within the context of this week, we're gonna see this, you know.
Right, exactly.
You know, Disability Week. You know, oh, well, there's a blind man talking to us about how he became blind. Okay, cool. You know, you can sort of piece together. I mean, it still doesn't – it may not make complete sense overall, but, you know – but, yeah, it's just this thing where you're just like, what are we doing again? Like, right now? Like, is this it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, another thing I resonated with was when he was talking about, like, someone who was, like, off – who had gotten off of drugs, and they were like, there's hope for you. Like, you elementary school kids, because, like, when, because I went to, like, a Christian high school, and they would, if they didn't have people in like this, or they may have, but I've forgotten, but they would play, like, videos where they would have someone being, like, a famous person, or some really cool whoever, and would just be like, listen, man, Jesus is first in my life. And, like, they had one video where it was the guy who was, like, the lead singer of Korn or something. Yeah. And, like, he was giving his message of how he used to do all the drugs and stuff, but then he found Jesus. And it was just one of those, it was just very much the thing he was talking about, where it's, like, adults trying to be, like, what's going to get kids to do what we want them to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're... Because he's hitting on this disconnect that we all had when we're kids, and these adults in our lives, you know, there's this feeling that there's something a little off. Not everything, but you're just like, but certain things you're just, it doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, and it's like a picture just blurry enough that you notice it, and you're like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah, and then he comes out and then Melanie comes out and points out the weirdness, and it's hilarious.
Yeah,
and
really funny.
And the older you get, and you know people who are principals and teachers and stuff, and you realize how, and parents, and you realize that such a huge percentage of it is just you making things up on the fly, like deciding in the moment, and that adulthood is still similar to childhood in a lot of ways, where you, there are these things that you have to do that you don't want to do, and you're trying to figure out the best way to do those things. It's funny. I mean, he does a good job of kind of talking, you know, just showing the absurdity of adulthood and pointing out that it's not that different from when we were kids or when we were, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's a really, really interesting point, because, like, I never thought about that, but when you said it, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I agree, because I'm thinking back to, like, some of his other specials, and, like, it's almost like a recurring theme of, like, a lot of his jokes are just around, like, how weird it is to be an adult, and like how everything is really played up as like this really big deal, but it's ultimately the same because you're still a person like when you were a kid, just trying to figure things out as you go along. Like another example from another special was when he had the teacher who was like drinking before she had to teach. Let's play a movie. Like, that's a really interesting point.
I forgot about. I can't remember if that was the first or the second special. I think it was the first. That was hilarious. He does this. It's very Seinfeldian, I feel like, in that it's like this absurdity that is presented in this very. And he's not completely clean, but you get the feeling that he could absolutely work clean if he needed to. And this very clean humor, and there's this cynicalness to it, and he's poking fun, and you know that he, if he wants to be mean, can be mean, probably meaner than you, but it's not mean-spirited. And he, yeah, it's just this great combination of clever writing, mischievousness, and then just practice and work, and it's impressive, man. Like,
yeah, he's really great.
Yeah, I mean,
I wanted to mention another joke that I thought was really good from the special. It was actually my favorite joke when him and his wife were talking about the Last Supper.
Yeah, that was so good. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the build up, because like the punchline is Thanksgiving, and it's like halfway through the joke, you like as soon as she says turkey, you know that that's the punchline.
Yeah.
But like the way that he's building it up is so funny. It was the funniest part of the special for me, and I thought it was just great.
That was good. Yeah.
and interesting in the way that like usually the punchline is supposed to be surprising, but this was something where actually everyone knew what it was, but just the anticipation, the build up was the funny part.
I know. Oh, yeah. That was pretty masterful. I mean, where you know, and I don't know if I've seen that too often from comics, where it's like the punchline is no surprise. Like, we know it. He's like giving it to you beforehand. And then he's like, all right, now that you know the punchline, the funny part is actually going to be how I set up and get to the punchline.
Right.
That I hadn't thought of that, but that is very impressive.
Yeah. And as funny as it is, I feel like it also is another thing that is relatable. Not in that way exactly, but I think everyone's had conversations with people you know or with friends, and they've said something that like hints that they believe something dumb.
Yeah.
And you just want to make sure, you want to hear them say the dumb thing that you're pretty sure that they think, so that you can have it on record in front of people. And like, so that's just so funny, and like, I don't know. It's not a thing that obviously that situation hasn't happened, but it feels like something that just happens to everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I like the fact that she was still willing, I'm not sure if the story plays out exactly this way, you know, as he presents it, but the fact that she was willing to answer his questions even after it was clear.
Right.
You know?
Right. But, yeah, and she knows where it's like heading, and then she's like trying to like deflect and like, well, the Catholic Church is terrible, whatever, and then he's like, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, we all know that.
It made her seem like not like a dumb person, but someone who said something dumb and is like realizing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Like, she doesn't come off as dumb in that story. She just comes off as someone who does not have just one piece of knowledge about culture that a lot of other people have.
Right, exactly. It's like everybody, you know, who's a part of that knows, but it's not like it doesn't really matter because it's not a part of her, you know, experience growing up. She wasn't a part of that sort of community. So the fact that she doesn't know it isn't really surprising to anyone. And I don't think it's, obviously, it's not a thing that is terrible, but the way that the story plays out makes it so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it was. I hadn't even thought of that one as one of my favorites, but the way you bring that up, the way that it was like, we know where it's headed, the impressiveness of that.
Yeah,
is it, I'm definitely, I've got to rework my top jokes or whatever, you know, from this, you know, my favorite ones special. I think my favorite one was when he was talking about Sir Patrick Stewart, because he mentions, because the way he gets into that bit, he mentions that he had a job in his 20s where writing for SNL, and everyone kind of claps, and then he goes, quick aside, and I'm guessing that was part of the routine. Like, it was supposed to be. But the way he set it up, it was like, oh, wait, I got this side story, and then I'll get back to what I'm really talking about. And to me, I feel like mentioning, like, the joke was just simply how Patrick Stewart introduced someone. And I feel like that's something you would kind of laugh at with your friends, you know, like he would, like maybe the next week in the writer's room, they make a joke out of that or whatever, but it doesn't become part of your stand-up special, you know? And yet it did with him. And I remember thinking, okay, I wonder if he's going to do an impression of Sir Patrick Stewart. And I'm like, even if he doesn't, it's still going to be funny. And then he does the impression, And I, no matter how hard I try, I can't do a British accent. I can just do certain words a little. But the way he was just like, and Peppa! And then he just goes into this description of it. And then when he's talking about the Mick Jagger thing and... you know, he kind of draws you into this absurd, like when he's describing it, he kind of describes you into this, he pulls you into this absurdist world where, like, it's just this, everything is extreme, or his descriptions are extreme, but for some reason, they don't feel extreme. They feel like you feel like you're right where you need to be, even though he's creating this, you know, like this image of Mick Jagger just saying Diet Coke, and then there's just a Diet Coke there, and he's like, oh yeah, of course. If you were the lead singer for the Rolling Stones, if you put your hand out and yell a drink, that drink is going to appear to you in your hand, you know. I don't know. I just and I had heard bits of that on a podcast John Mulaney was on a couple months ago. I didn't know it was going to be any special, but it was still just, even though I knew I'd heard it before, it was still just hilarious. And I was enjoying seeing him, you know, do it and say it as much as hearing him. But I just, I like the fact that there was, he made a bit out of Sir Patrick Stewart announcing Salt and Peppa in a way that it didn't make fun of Patrick Stewart, didn't make fun of Salt and Peppa. It was just making fun of, like, this little moment and sort of bringing you in, because you could see Sir Patrick Stewart doing that and hearing, you know, if you're familiar with who he is and the cadence of his voice. I don't know. I just, there was something masterful about that that joke that I really liked.
It was really interesting. And I honestly, it's weird, but it almost makes me, like, sad for people who are, like, that massively successful and that massively, like, popular celebrities like that who can just get anything by asking. It has to, I don't know. It just feels weird to me. Like, I feel like no person, you shouldn't give that to a person if you care about them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels a little lonely.
Because, I mean, I think, like Dave Chappelle has, he does this Masterpiece Theater interview with James Lipton, and, he's talking about how, you know, it's easy to call someone crazy when you don't understand their behavior. He says, but it's dismissive. And he's like, maybe there's something sick about Hollywood, and kind of gets a little bit of an applause there. He's like not trying to be funny or anything. He's just doing the interview. And I mean, I think it's not Hollywood per se, but it's just, I think that if you get to a level of fame where there is no resistance in your life, or the resistance comes in ways that you're completely unprepared for growing up, I could see how that could drive someone to erratic behavior.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about Mick Jagger, because I don't know enough about him to know how, you know, weird his behavior is or normal.
Yeah,
but I can see how, just playing off of what you're saying, like if you really love someone, you won't do that to him. I just think about Kanye's meltdown in the last week, and it's like, I would say for the last 10 years, maybe even 13 years, anything he's probably reasonably wanted to do, he's been able to do, you know, like, and like, if it was like, Garrett, what, you know, if you can, you know, your ultimate goals with comedy, everything you would want to do just in life and outside of life, what would they be? And then you list them all, and then you get to do those things, and you still have plenty of time and plenty of money left. Like, I could see how that could,
yeah,
you know,
that could mess you up a little bit. I think it's like it's almost like the age old thing where it's like, never give a person everything that they want.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of like, I don't know if you've seen the show Jessica Jones.
No.
Well, basically the main villain is a guy who like has mind control, and like the interesting thing about him is that he's basically a child, because he's been able to make people do things that he wants since he was a child, and so there was no reason really to ever grow.
Yeah.
And so it's really weird and really lonely for this person, because he doesn't really have a peer, because he can't interact with the person in any way except for getting the thing that he wants.
That's interesting. I've heard good things about the show. I haven't seen it, but yeah, I definitely see how that could be problematic. I think this is why sometimes even celebrities who don't necessarily like each other kind of connect with each other, because they're the only ones who really understand what each other is going through. You know what I mean? But getting back to Mulaney, like, I gotta admit, I don't think I had any jokes of his that I didn't like. Or anything that I would mention as, like nothing jumped out to me where I'm like, I wasn't feeling this part, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything?
Like I said, about halfway through, I felt a little bit like I was losing a little bit of interest, but I couldn't remember exactly what it was. One thing I thought was interesting is how he talked about Trump in a way where he was sort of reticent to even talk about it, because he's not usually political, and, you know, at this point, there's always someone talking about Trump, so I felt like he uses this sort of horse in the hospital analogy to sort of not talk about him while also talking about him.
Yeah.
Which was great, and like, it was really, really funny. He made a lot of really interesting points, but at the same time, once he like brought in a hippo, it was like, this is getting
like too absurdist.
Yeah, too absurd, a little too like involved. And I was thinking he was gonna make a joke about the joke format and like, I don't know, make that funny, but he kind of just kept going, and it just was a little bit, I don't know, weird, even though the joke was still really funny. It feels like nitpicking with Mulaney.
Yeah,
because everything he does is like really good, so if there's like one thing that's just okay, that's the one thing you mentioned, but it's also fine.
Yeah, right. It's still, yeah, it's like, that could be most people's closing bit, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Well, I remember when he was doing that, my thought was, there's no way I could ever do this on stage. Like, it's extreme, because there's a one point where he's using the same voice to perform dialogue in the situation. Like, hey, there's a horse in here. But you weren't complaining about that horse 3 years ago. Well, that was different because, you know, and then he's using, again, the same, and it could be confusing. I remember thinking, I'm not confused at all, but I feel like if I were to do this joke on stage, people would get confused as to what, like, who was talking, and it seemed very skillful, even though it was there was that absurdity of it. I do like the way he ends it, where he's just like, you know, he's like, I pay attention more, you know, but like if you left your kids with a babysitter, you wouldn't check in on them every day, you know, every minute. But if you left them with Gary Busey, like, I just love that. Like, I just,
yeah.
Like, cause it was definitely unexpected. You didn't, I mean, I didn't know where he was going to go with it, but it, I mean, just the delivery of Gary Busey's name is what, I mean, it's Gary Busey. The name does sound funny. And then the character he's sort of become, the cartoon of himself, makes it even funnier. But then just the fact that he just, I feel like he delivered that line as well as a comic could. And
it was
impressive. Yeah, man, I don't know. I mean, it was weird. I did find myself, and I don't know how you felt about this. Like, I felt like I was both inspired to go write and practice and improve, and then also a little discouraged because I'm like, man, I don't see how I could get to this level.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, that's, I think really good comedy specials for me aren't really great places to look for inspiration.
Yeah.
What I look for, and what would have been better, if we were looking for inspiration, is like a comedian who has a special, so they're relatively successful, and they are just the worst. That makes me feel good because it's like, if I can be as good as them and they're awful, then maybe there's hope for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That, I don't know if that's confusing.
No, but, dude, I know exactly what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, like, you know, we have friends who are musicians. It's like if you hear certain songs on the radio, and if you're being honest with yourself and you're like, oh, I can do better than this, there's a little bit of encouragement that comes with that. I mean, I could see how it could drive someone crazy, too. Like, this guy's on the radio, this guy's a Netflix special, but I don't. But on another level, it's like, all right, I'm doing the right things. I'm heading in the right direction. I can get to this. This is approachable. This seems doable. That's what I think you're getting at. I'm not sure, but I feel like...
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, of course, obviously, things like this, it's... Obviously, there's a lot that goes into it, so just because you're better than someone, and this is all obviously subjective based on our own opinions, but just because you feel like, I'm pretty sure I'm funnier than this person, or I'm a better musician, or whatever, it doesn't really mean anything as far as success, but it does feel nice to be like, as far as the quality of the craft, I feel like I'm on par with this person that's successful. So, like, ideally or theoretically, it's possible that I could do something with this.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch, like, someone like John Mulaney, who's so polished, and it's almost like every beat has been planned.
Yeah.
It like you said, it can feel a little bit discouraging. You're just like, oh, my God, this guy is so, so much better than me. And the interesting thing is, before I started doing, comedy, specials were basically the only reference I had for comedy. Like, I hadn't really seen a lot of local comics, hadn't really seen a lot of people who were comedians and were really funny, but they weren't, like, at the peak of their success.
Yeah.
So you always see these things where these people are come up and they're fully put together and everything is there. And it's crazy to think that they were ever not amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's hard to imagine.
It's a little bit different experience where you see someone like at a bar and you're watching them put together their jokes and like it's funny and then you see them do the joke, you know, various different places and different times and you can watch them get better and it's different. It's a kind of a more interesting experience, but it's not as intimidating.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I mean, I think that's why, like, when you tell people, like, because I've done this before with people, I've been like, oh, you should do comedy. I think you should come out to an open mic. Just check it out. And people are always intimidated, as we were, right, when we first did it, because we're so used to seeing that finished product. But then when you see, like someone struggling through a bit, at a sports bar, and no one's paying attention, not even the comics, You know, it definitely seems more doable, it's hard to imagine John Mulaney doing this bit, telling the story about his dad, and just no one paying attention. You know what I mean? And just not getting laughs. Like it seems improbable.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine him bombing.
Right. I mean, you know, it's part of the process, but
exactly.
I know. I imagine though. There were times where he was at, because I've seen it too, where, you know, you'll be at an open mic and the crowd's not really into it. I mean, they're paying attention, but they're not. There's regulars at the bar or whatever. And, you know, you go up and you get some laughs, and that's just, you know, par for the course. And then someone who's really good gets up, and you can feel the laughter and the energy. And you're just like, okay. That's how much better that guy is than me or that girl. And
right.
I imagine John Mulaney definitely had nights where he didn't get as many laughs or bombed, but I imagine he was that guy a lot of the time when he was starting up, you know, maybe not that first year, but I imagine after the first 6 months, first 8 to 12 months, he was probably doing pretty consistently. Still not on the level that he was with the specials, but I imagine he was, you know, pretty good pretty early to be where he's at now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he's definitely put in the work. But he was, I imagine he was ahead of the curve even as a young comic. You know, like him and another comic starting on the same day. 6 months later, he's probably way ahead of him, you know?
Yeah, probably. I have no clue, but that makes sense just seeing where he's at now. I think it's sort of funny how, like, a lot of his jokes are about, like, how sort of, like, goofy and, like, self, like, conscious he is.
Yeah.
But, like, here we are in a podcast talking about, like, how masterful he is at something. And I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like even when he's being sort of goofy, like, I remember one time he was, like, he said, and this, and he, like, kicked his arm and his legs out, his arm and his leg out at the same time. But there was, I don't know, maybe outside of the context of being on stage as a comic, it wouldn't work, but, and being dressed nice. But for me, it even then seemed like he was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was trying to emphasize how goofy he was or whatever, or gangly, but he was still cool. I don't know.
I see what you mean. I agree. He definitely had a very nice suit. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't really think about that, but I totally agree.
Do you think John Mulaney will, because I remember thinking, watching him, like, if he came on TV every night, I feel like he would do well. Like, I feel like if he had his own talk show.
Yeah. I think that would be really interesting. I feel like he'd be good at it. I wonder if he has the interest, but
I don't know if he does. I don't think he would want to make political jokes. Like,
right,
it seems like you would have to do if you had your own talk show. And he seems to be too funny to do, like, the kind of, like, even though I really like this, the Joel McHale show, I wonder what the next move for John Mulaney is, because he seems to just be this great comic. I've never seen him do a movie. I mean, I don't know if he goes the sitcom route again, but you know, stand up almost always, as we talked about, seems to be a springboard to something else.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I wonder where his career's going to take him.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a an animated version of his childhood, kind of like an F is for Family thing that Bill Burr has.
Oh, man, I love that show.
Yeah,
that
so really good. Cool. It's so good. We may need to do a podcast on that show.
Yeah, that would be a great episode, I think, because that show is the bomb.
Yeah, it's amazing. We'll talk about it off air and then surprise our listeners next week with our decision. But man, we've talked for 40 minutes. It was weird. Like I felt like the special was so good that it almost like propelled us forward, you know? Cause there are some things that we talked about before we started recording. But we can kind of get to those later, Is there anything that you've listened to, watched in the last week or so that you want to recommend to the listeners?
Yeah, and I think I have to thank you for it, because I think last week, I don't remember if this was on the podcast or off, but you recommended that I watch the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, dude, I fucking love that show. Like I've watched like the first four episodes, and I started watching like yesterday.
Yeah.
And like, oh my god, it's so great. I'm usually like a really bad person when it comes to TV shows, because I'll always be recommending shows to people, but people will recommend me shows, and I'll like never watch them.
Yeah.
But like, I checked that out, and it's so good, and like everything is interesting. She's really cool, and like all the characters, except for Joel, are amazing, and so I really like that show. So thanks for recommending it.
Oh yeah, so that's what's up. Yeah, we'll have to. When you finish that one, we'll have to do a podcast on that as well.
Yeah.
I guess my recommendation for the audience is I just finished this book, Seinfeldia. It's about that blurry line between reality, like the fictional world of Seinfeld, and the reality that we live in, and how the show really blurred those lines. Because, like, and I don't know how big of a Seinfeld fan you are, but there was like a character named Crazy Joe Davola that was based on a real guy named Joe Davola, but it was really just a name only. Like the character and the guy didn't have too much of a difference, you know. There were too many similarities, but the guy who was actually Joe Davola was able to get into restaurants, was able to do all these things because he had this name, and because he was able to say, "Hey, the character was based on me," you know. And there was a lot of like that happened a lot in the show, because the writers were encouraged to mine their own lives and own experiences for script fodder. So almost all of the plots, on the show were variations of things that had actually happened in the writers' lives. And so it created this weird sort of third world where things were kind of true, but then kind of not true. And it's, very similar to, the character one plays when they're on stage. You know, it's like a version of themselves, but then it's not the real version of themselves, but there is some truth to, And so anyway, I would recommend that book. I listened to it on Audible, but I think it'd be a good sit down and read book as well. So if you are a fan of Seinfeld or just like 90s stuff, 90s comedy, 90s culture, it's worth listening to. It's worth reading.
Great. Sounds like a good book.
Yeah. Well, all right, sir, man, we are approaching the 44-minute mark, so we will release the audience. Y'all can go do whatever else you have to do for your day. Yes. Yes. You are now free. Live your life. Go forth. All right, man. Well, I will, we'll talk next week, and,
great.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if there's too much to say after that.
Yeah. I think this is probably the good place to end it.
All right.